I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing. Yeah.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life I've lived under the gaze of my parents.
Fuck that shit.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Dig Deep. This is the episode where myself and Leanne ask each other a series of questions as a way to get to know each other more and dig deeper into our sisterhood. But I wanted to ask Leanne, with it being Christmas and the new year, have you got any resolutions?
I always have New Year's resolutions and I never stick to them. Going into this year, I'm really, really focused on being more financially successful and really like getting my money up this year. I think that's my main goal. So much of the work that I do in my like 9 to 5 and so much of the work that we do is because we're passionate about the work that we do and we're passionate about our community and supporting our community. But I think it's time for me to get paid.
I definitely agree and can relate to that. Not in terms of setting that as a New Year's resolution, but I definitely think I've tried to be more intentional recently with actually saying no to things that are free.
Yeah.
In terms of like doing free work, unless it's something I'm really, really passionate about or I think should be done for free.
Obviously, we're all multifaceted. We all do a number of different things, but you have to prioritize yourself first. So you are then in a position to help other people, right? And service your community in the way that you really want to. It doesn't make sense for you to be, you know, shelling out all of your time, money, energy. And at the end of the day, you're coming home and you can't feed yourself or you can't feed your family. That is self-defeating. Like, you are a part of the community that you're trying to service. And if I win, we all win. If you lose, we all lose. You know what I mean? But on that note, why don't you do New Year's resolutions? I mean, I know, but I think we should tell everybody else because it's actually a really good point.
Well, outside of the fact that I don't really stick to them beyond the first like quarter, like after March is probably not there anymore. I just feel like New Year's resolutions are essentially goals. And I actively work towards setting goals and assessing the goals that I have set like all the time throughout the year. So by the time it gets to December or the lead up into New Year's, there wouldn't be something for me to create because I've already maybe implemented that or made that a goal in September or in August. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. And you're right. I think you said to me one day, you were like, well, if it's a New Year's resolution and we're in October, or if where it's a New Year's resolution and we're in March, why not just start now? It's like, what are you waiting on?
Yeah, but I do think it's good in terms of like, I'm lying. Because I was going to say it's good in terms of accountability because there's other people around you simultaneously starting a resolution. It's good to then be like, I'm going to do this with another person. So for example, if I'm like, my New Year's resolution is to lose weight or to go to the gym more, and it just so happens that's yours, we can kind of keep each other accountable. But then I also think that aside, I should be able to do that with you at any point throughout the year, whether or not that's your resolution or not.
If you have like-minded people around you, those people should always be setting goals anyway at various points throughout the year.
I've got a friend called Aaliyah, and we, I don't know if we started this year. I think we started the year before. So we had a goal setting session, I think, in 2022, a few throughout the year. And they weren't joint. We would just literally be on the phone, on FaceTime, in silence for like an hour and a half, and just write down our goals, write down the things we want to do. And then we would talk to the other person about it. And then we'd wait to the next meeting. And at the next meeting, we'd have a conversation around the goals that we did or didn't do. And there was times where we was like, we haven't hit it, but actually we're really happy that we hadn't, because our direction's changed, or what we were trying to do has changed, or something else came that was better than what we had actually planned to do. I guess, again, that's why New Year's resolutions don't maybe appeal to me as much, because I feel like throughout the year I'm being quite intentional with goals. Although this year I did say to myself, I want to give myself a break, because I normally, every year, and I've been doing this since I was really, really young, I normally create a list of like goals I want to do by the 10th of January. And I'm not sure why it's the 10th. This is just a date that I've stuck to. I create this list and I'll break it down into like a financial goals. I don't know how to pronounce the word. Miscellaneous. Okay. It's written down, but I can't pronounce it. Miscellaneous goals. And that'll probably be more things to do, like go skydiving or walk a dog, because I don't like dogs. It will be random things like that. So essentially, the list that I create by the 10th of January is like a bucket list, but combined with goals. And then whenever I feel lost throughout the year, or whenever I feel like I'm going off track, I refer back to that to give me a sense of direction. So I don't use it as like a Bible in terms of I have to make sure I hit all these goals. I use it as a place where I've written something, where I've actually been able to reflect on what I've done, where I'm going, and things that would be nice to achieve. And at any point where I feel like I'm coming off track or I need a direction, I refer back to that. Because I feel like sometimes when you're in a season of feeling lost or feeling confused about what you want to do, it's easy to then take on advice and take on things that you see online and internalize those things, when actually we just need to stick back with what we actually set out to do in the beginning.
And what's on your bucket list for 2024?
I mean, it's not January the 10th yet, so I've still got some time, all right? But what will definitely be on there, because this has been on there for like the last 4 years and hasn't happened, would be a solo trip. You do solo trips and they look amazing and you speak really highly about them. But I think it would be to do a solo trip. So right now I'm meant to be going to Dubai later on this year. And because Dubai is like a middle point, I was like, this is a really great time for me to then fly to like Asia or Thailand, which is somewhere where I wanted to go, and then have my solo trip then when I'm already like halfway.
Okay, that sounds like a good show.
Because how are you with long journeys? Because this is what my issue is. The places that I want to go to by myself are far, and I don't really like flying, despite the fact that I fly a lot. So I don't want to be on the flight for really, really long, unless I'm in first class. And I currently don't have first class money for the places that I want to go to.
Well, so there's two parts to that. One, I don't do anything over 5 hours unless I'm flying business class. Like, I cannot do it anymore. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, I have to do it for work. And what I'll do is they'll pay for the ticket and I'll usually end up just upgrading myself because, yeah, spending longer than 5 hours on a plane without being comfortable is torture. The other thing is that I actually like flying for long periods of time because it means that nobody can get in touch with me. Like, it's like a mini vacation before the vacation. It's like, what, for 10 hours, nobody can call my phone. Nobody can reach me out from work. Like, nobody can call me and tell me about their dilemmas. I can just sleep, eat, drink for free.
If you're in business, yeah, which is when you're having the 10-hour flights, that makes sense. That's fine. If you're in economy, you're not.
Don't do it.
And this is not me being it. Just for people listening that might misconstrue what I'm saying. I fly economy all the time, baby. But when you fly economy for a long haul, let's say when I go to Antigua, yes, 8.5 hours. I am thinking the entire time, it gets me off this plane, I am uncomfortable. Yep. I'm moving around, I'm restless, and it's just not nice. Do you get what I mean? Whereas when I flew to Vegas, maybe like 5 years ago now, when I went to Vegas, my best friend worked at Virgin at the time. So we was able to get like business class, first class tickets really cheap. So we did that. I promise you, I don't know if I've ever told you this yet. I actually cried. Like I sat in first class and I cried because I was like, is this how people live? Like, is this, this is normal. When I'm normally at the back and my leg is all mash up. Yeah. And I've got all these crying youths around me. This is what people are living the good life.
These crying youths.
And this, not like mine, just like people on the plane. Like this particular flight was so nicely. Like they had like a bar in the middle you could sit on. Everyone apart from me and my friend seemed to know each other. And when I asked the lady next to me, like, oh, how are you guys all flying together? Like, what's the vibe? And she was like, no, we've just become friends because we're always in first class. I said, okay.
Well, I don't have it like that. But folks, pay attention to your miles. Sign up for the miles. Become dedicated to a particular airline. Get your credit card. Get a credit card that builds up points and miles. It makes a difference. Do not sleep on that shit.
And also, if you don't want to get a credit card, but you do want to build miles, and I can only speak on behalf of BA, you can connect your BA Avios points to your Uber and your Uber Eats and to Nexo, I think.
Yeah, it's like there's a whole host of things. It's like Uber Eats. There's like ASOS, I think, a whole bunch of ones that you can connect to your Avios points. And it takes time, but if you do a long haul flight, it adds up as well. Like if you have miles and you do a long haul flight, it adds up.
And
so,
and on the point of credit cards, for people that do have them and use them responsibly, the Amex card, I recently got, and I'm very annoyed because when I got it, I was meant to do like spend a certain amount in the first 3 months so you can get like bonus Avios points.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I just forgot to do that and I absolutely didn't do it. But one of my friends, she has the Avios, and basically on the card that we both got, if you spend £12,500 on it within 12 months, it gives you, what does it give you? It gives you like a buy one, get one free, basically.
Oh, nice.
For a flight. So like I can go onto Antigua and then I can take you for free and you'll be in the same cabin as me, or I can go on a flight by myself and then get like reduced fees for like business class or first class or whatever. And what my friend does to make sure she hits her 12.5 target is that she makes all of her bills and all of her like big spending that happens every single month come off her Amex, and then she
and just off pays it back paid.
And I'm like, that's just so smart.
That makes so much sense. And believe you me, we all need a holiday after the year that we've had. Like the last quarter of this year has been absolutely crazy with everything going on in the news, people's personal lives, our personal lives. It's just been a crazy year.
The trauma.
Trust me, Jaja.
Yeah, no, it's been a lot. It's been a lot. And I feel like for me, holidays are a great way to just switch off and to unwind. Although you're not very good at that, but I feel like that's... No. This is me being honest. Because we spoke before on the podcast about like when it comes to you and switching off. And I feel like on your New Year's resolution list, that should probably be something on there.
This December was the first time that I've taken almost an entire month off work. And while it has not been perfect, it's definitely been an improvement upon what has been previously the case in terms of how I'm able to shut off. So I am quite proud of myself. I still have more work to do. And yes, I will add it to the New Year's resolutions. So let's get into it. Last dig deep of Christmas or of the new year. Let's get going.
When was the last time you felt vulnerable with me and why?
I was thinking of like a sad time when I cried in front of you or something, but no, actually, and this is part of what I love about our friendship. I feel like I remember telling you this story about an ex that I had and one that I was like trying to negotiate a friendship with. And you definitely called me out. You were like, bullshit, not happening. Don't do it. Don't be ridiculous. Don't fool yourself into thinking that this can actually, you can actually do this like you've done so many times before. So yeah, I think the last time I felt vulnerable with you was when you called me on my shit.
It's funny because as you're telling that story, I actually remember
I was doing something when I was texting you. I remember just stopping and being like, I need to get this point across. Where is she going with this?
Yeah, because I like to delude myself into believing that I can be friends with anybody and everybody. Mm-hmm. And the truth is sometimes you just can't. Yeah. And I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point in time on the podcast, our own forgiveness and what that looks like. Yeah, forgiveness does not always look like repairing a friendship. When was the last time you cried?
So I've been crying quite a lot recently because I'm navigating grief. So the last time I haven't cried today. The last time I cried was probably yesterday.
Okay.
It's largely because of, in fact, it's only because of the grief at the moment. Because yeah. I feel like it's such a big cloud. Not even cloud, because it actually doesn't feel like a cloud, because I have so much like positive vibes about it at the same time as being like deeply sad. But there's like, because it is a real like deep level of sadness, unless something's gonna trump that, it's probably not gonna trigger me to cry, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've cried a lot recently, but it's mainly to do with that. But it actually feels good.
I was talking to another friend of mine who lost her brother at a very young age. And it's been some time, but, you know, grief has no time period on it. Do you ever feel guilty for your grief? Because I feel like there's conversations that I've had with people, including her, about feeling guilty about grief. Like, does your grief trump other people's grief? Do you feel bad in moments like no, when you're laughing and joking around, do you feel like you should just be morose and sad the entire time? Like, are there elements where you feel guilty about navigating your grief?
I wouldn't say guilt. It's more like uncomfortable. Okay. So I think in the early stages, if I was to laugh, I didn't really laugh, to be honest. Even if something was funny, like I couldn't really like actually let out that sort of emotion. It just felt uncomfortable. Yeah. It wasn't like guilt though. It was more uncomfortable. Yeah. And it's more uncomfortable because losing my great aunt, she was literally like my person. She was someone that I went to for everything. So the likelihood, whatever I'm laughing at, I would have ended up telling her on day or the next day. And I was talking to my mum about it the other day, and I was saying, like, losing my aunt because of who she is would have always been hard. But because she's my person, it makes it a lot harder. Not to do, like grief Olympics or trauma Olympics. But I think when you have someone who's your person, someone you talk to every single day, the littlest inconvenience you call them, the biggest thing you call them, they like the person you update about every little thing, and then they just go, and there's no like warning or even today I went to call her a minute ago, and I found the process of grief uncomfortable a lot. Sometimes I found myself talking about her a lot, and because I've always spoken about her a lot, I'm like overdoing it. I can't explain it. I'm in my head a lot. I'm like, oh, like I was with my mum the other day and I apologized. I was like, oh, sorry, I keep talking about her a lot. And she was like, but you like, you always talk about it.
Yeah, don't feel bad.
Different. But it just feels for me like, am I now making other people feel uncomfortable because I keep talking about it? I don't think it's guilt, but I understand why people would feel guilty in that situation. I have experience, but it's not like the most prominent feeling. So for example, like when I went to, when we won the award, the National Diversity Award, and I posted like pictures of myself on Instagram, that was like really close after to her passing. It might have been like days or
a week, or it was within the week.
And I remember my cousin, who's on a different side of the family but knows my aunt, she was like, oh, I'm so happy that you're smiling and you're in a good place. Mm-hmm. And I remember responding to her and being like, oh, when I got off the stage, the first thing I did was cry. Like I literally cried with my mum, and nobody saw that side of it. Before I got there, I was calling my aunt, sent her the link. Like, you're not seeing these things, you're just seeing a picture. And I feel like I keep saying to myself, the internet's not a real place, because there's so much about myself that I might be putting online or I might be posting. And it might be portrayed, and I'm not trying to portray that I'm happy. I'm actually just posting something because I find it funny or because I find it relatable. And it's easy for people to see that and think like, oh, she's good. But I'm actually going through like
serious shit.
Like serious things. Do you get what I mean? In that instance, I remember thinking like, oh wow, so should I not post then? Because does it come across to other people, I didn't feel hurt or I don't feel upset? But actually I did, and it's overwhelming, but I still was going to do that post.
I completely get where you're coming from, and I think it is important to make sure that you're prioritizing yourself, and what grief looks like to other people doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you should abide by. Mm-hmm. But on the calling thing, just to bring a lighter moment to it, I remember when my friend Dre passed very suddenly, he droned, and I messaged him as soon as I found out and was like, you're joking. Like, stop playing about. And to be honest, maybe up until six months ago, every now and again, I would still message him until somebody responded and was like, this is no longer the right number.
Sorry to laugh.
No, it was funny. It was funny.
Do you know how much of a mindfuck that is? Because you're going to be like, rah, he's messaged back.
So the point is, until you get that message that says, Aunt Carol's, this is not Aunt Carol anymore, or this is not Aunt Carol's phone, just keep messaging. Because every time something would pop up, or I would think about him, or I would see something, he and his wife, his widow are very big on like full moons and energy. And I would just constantly message him about random shit like that until I couldn't anymore. And I know that sounds crazy.
It's not always good to like find comfort in other people's pain, but at the same time, like, hearing that kind of reassures me of my own experience, because I feel like, even though I have like my family around me and stuff, so in all of my immediate family, because she's just a whole and all of them, I don't really feel comfortable having conversations with them about what I'm experiencing, because I know they're experiencing it too. But like, my brother mentioned the other day that he messaged my aunt like some mad paragraph. Obviously she's not here, but he was like, "Rah, who's got her phone because it delivered?" And he was like, "I wasn't expecting that." And I was like, "Oh, my daughter has, but like, don't worry, she probably won't even read it." When he told me that, it made me think, "Oh, okay, so it's not just me." And then now hearing from you, it's like, okay, it's not just us, because it's like, this is probably more common than we realized. Yeah, I sent her bear messages like, "Bruv, wake the fuck up."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're getting me mad. I've got stories to tell you. It's crazy.
Oh, that actually made me feel better too. Because I used to think it was crazy and I never told anybody. I think I told one other person that I was still messaging Dre's phone. And I definitely think they looked at me sideways. Now that I know that there's a few of us.
Welcome to the club.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt, but we just wanted to say, if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button.
Unapologetically Black.
What is one emotion I should practice more of and why?
Emotion, not behavior. My first like knee-jerk reaction was selfishness, but that's not an emotion, that's a behavior. Self-involvement, and I know that's like a bit of an extreme version, but I feel like you spend so little time like pampering and treating yourself. Like, you are boundaried. And so in that sense, you are very aware of your own emotions and stuff like that. But we've talked about this before. Like, sometimes I just want to see you, like, splurge on yourself. Buy yourself something fancy. Like, engage in some retail therapy that's just for you. Not for the house or not for the someone's birthday. Like, genuinely just, like, you, like, this is what I want, not what I need. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you have to do it all the time. I'm not trying to send you into poverty, but like me. But I feel like there's more balance to be had in just treating yourself, just because, not because you're rewarding yourself, but actually just fuck it. Yeah. I want you to engage in some more fuck it.
Maybe that's my, you know, I don't do New Year's resolutions, but maybe that's mine.
My next question is, when was the last time you felt really connected to me?
I feel like every time we do these dig deep episodes, I feel very connected to you, because I feel like it's easy to become complacent in relationships and friendships when you're already at a certain level of closeness, to just feel like this is okay, we've hit the peak, we've hit like a plateau. But I think every time we do this, we're always learning and unlearning so much about each other, that it's creating really intimate spaces, even though we're like a million miles away in proximity. So I'd say these sessions, really.
Oh, well, we do them every week, so that's good to know. I was trying to think of when the last time I felt really connected to you. every now and again, you'll message me and you'll be like, I'm so proud of us. And sometimes I forget to be proud of us. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just because it's like, we're just, you know, on the wheel of like getting stuff done. And every time you say that to me, I pause and I'm like, look at what we've done. And that makes me feel connected to you, actually. Mm-hmm. Because I reflect on our journey in like a snapshot in my memory kind of thing.
In what ways is our outlook on sexuality similar and different?
I think actually the ways in which it's similar is that we are very non-judgmental. Even though you have like very strong, you know, Christian backgrounds and beliefs, or Christian background and beliefs, you're non-judgmental, and you're like, whatever makes people happy is whatever makes people happy. Like, you, even if it's not for you, you're not judgmental of that. And similarly, whatever makes people happy, I'm okay with. I don't care what people do or not do, or what they choose or what they believe in any way, shape or form. As long as nobody's hurting anybody else, unless that's something that you like, then I'm okay. The ways in which we are different is that I probably delve into that spectrum of non-judgmentalness a little bit more. So even though you're not judgmental, I also think you know what you like and what you don't like. And you're pretty clear about that. Not to say that you're not open, but you have boundaries. Mm. I think my notion of sexuality, I am probably a little bit more fluid in the way that I express my sexuality. Like, I've dabbled across genders, for instance, and quite comfortable with that in a way that doesn't bother me or make me feel embarrassed. It's not a thing that I did when I was young just because for the sake of experimenting, but something that I'm genuinely consistently open to. Not now because I'm getting married. But, you know, if I fell in love with a woman in 2 years and wanted to get married, maybe I would. My own understanding of my own sexuality, as opposed to not being judgmental to others, is different from yours in terms of being a little bit more fluid.
I agree with that.
Yeah. I've never actually even asked you if you've dabbled outside of men.
No.
Okay, I didn't think so, but I just thought that.
That's why I said I agree. Because when you were first explaining that, I was like, "What does she mean?
Where is she going with it?"
Then you was like, "Fluid." I said, "Aha." But like, yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I know what I like. I know what I don't like. And in my head, if I know I like this, I'm just gonna stick with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like exploring in other areas.
Very true. So, what is one lesson I could learn that will really help me?
Sis, I don't know. What's a lesson that Leanne could learn that could help her?
Financial responsibility.
Outside of that one, because that's the first thing that came to my head.
Shame.
You don't need to actually learn it, though. You already know it. You just need to implement it.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, 100%. Even if like, we make light of like the difference between the two of us, your financial management and mindset is not actually bad. There's just areas that could be improved. Do you know, I can't, is this the first answer that I'm unable to give on the podcast? What's a lesson that Leanne could learn? I would probably say boundaries. And again, similar to the discussion we had around the finance bit just then, it's not that you don't know it, it's more just about implementing it. Yeah. And I think that sometimes, unfortunately, and I don't want it to be this way, so maybe this can be like a light bulb moment for you on your journey with implementing better boundaries within your life. I feel like the reason why I am so particular with boundaries is because I got to a breaking point where I had no other choice.
Mm.
And I don't think I want that for people around me, which is why I'm so passionate about talking about boundaries and even like asserting it within myself and somebody else. So for example, I remember I was talking to my neighbor and I asked her to help me with something. It might have been like, it wasn't this, but let me use this as an example, yeah? So I might have said, can you drop me to the swimming pool? And her response back was like a long paragraph telling me no, but like really over-explaining herself. Like, okay. Oh, I can't because of this, and I'm sorry, and then this. And my first response was, I'm not sure who's made you feel like you have to over-explain yourself all the time, but I don't want you to ever feel like that with me. Like, you are well within your rights to decline a question I ask you, whether or not you have a valid reason. If you just can't be bothered, just say no. And the point wasn't to say that I wanted her to just, like, just say yes or no and, like, not explain. Obviously, you can explain, but from the message that she sent, she was actually over-explaining, as if, like, it was almost like the fact that she had to say no made her feel bad.
Right,
and
I wanted her
to know that within our friendship, that's not what exists here. Like, you don't have to feel bad for saying no, whether or not I'm aware of whether your reason is, like, valid or not. It's not for me to decide that. But that was really early on into us being neighbours. But now I know her more, I've identified why she would have been like that in that moment, because the other friendships that she has that are really close to her require that of her. Because there are people that are close to her that expect her to always be available and always say yes and always just, like, expect her to show up in a people-pleaser nature.
Yeah, yeah.
I think sometimes with life, when it comes to lessons, the lessons that we have learned, when we see that somebody else needs it, it's important for us to also encourage them and help them too. Obviously, agreed. Not just projecting, because sometimes I think it's projecting. Like, the amount of times I've seen older women tell me or tell somebody else something, and you look at their own life and they're like, but sis, where have you done this? It's like when people talk online about, like, the pressure to get married, and it's like, but you're not married. The pressure to have babies. Yeah. You had a baby at 56. Like, what are we discussing here?
Or when people talk about having discipline and structure, but they have absolutely none in their own life. Very annoying, yeah.
Like, the math isn't mathing, sis. I feel like it has to come from a healthy place. But yeah, I think boundaries, it's probably a lesson. Not a lesson, but
something that I need to be more cognizant of.
I think it was hard for me to answer that question because I think you're someone who's extremely self-aware. So I feel like lessons is like, you know, I don't know if you grew up hearing this, but I grew up hearing, like, if you don't hear, you'll feel. Whether it was towards me or towards somebody else. When a parent or guardian or someone says that phrase, it's normally because the person is not understanding the lesson. So they're basically saying, you're going to have to learn the hard way to be able to understand. I don't think you're someone who's like that. I think you're someone who, if someone tells you something, you can reflect on it and, like, self-educate yourself on whatever that is and then make better decisions.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. I mean, we've discussed before that you don't like being told no.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, whether or not someone tells you a piece of advice and you want to implement it straight away, or you want to save it for a rainy day, like, you still take it on board. You might take it on board and then say no, but it's still digested.
Yeah.
So what role does pain or hurt have in our relationship?
It has a lot in our relationship. Not because of each other, but I think we have been there for each other during really difficult times. And as a result, that safe space that we've been talking about, not only have we learned how to curate it for each other, but I think we've gotten better at curating it for other people because we've been through so much together in terms of going through a difficult time at work or grief or relationships, whatever it is. I think those moments have actually, outside of the intentionality and everything, but those moments have actually forced our relationship to grow significantly in a shorter period of time. So even though we've only been friends for 4 years,
yeah,
it feels that much longer because I feel like the things, the types of things that we've been through and the similar levels of trauma that we've had have actually brought us closer together much quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of pain, what do you remember about the last time we handled conflict between us?
So I don't think either of us are conflict-averse people, but I just don't find conflict a thing that happens within our relationship. And it's not to say that I find it in others, because I look at most of my friends that I'm close to, conflict won't really arise. But if I was to put it in, like, an order of category of, like, least likely to, you'd probably be at the top of it.
I think we've disagreed on stuff, but it's never been to the point where it forces us to be angry or, yeah.
The
The fact that I can't remember a specific example, I think in itself speaks volumes to the way that we handle conflict, because I think with other people, you might be able to be like, that person was dismissive, or that person shouted, or that person said this, or that person said that. And I feel like whenever we've experienced a level of conflict, however high or low that is, it gets resolved very easily. It's not something that pans out. It's not something that gets dragged out. It's literally a conversation. We listen to what each other has to say, and that's the end.
It's a personality thing as well, because I immediately thought about another friend who, she has had drama with every other friend in our friendship group, including me. And I just don't care enough to argue about something that's super minuscule. Like, you don't always have to be right. Like, I'm okay with being wrong. You know what I mean? Yes, of course I want to be understood and I want to be heard, especially if it's something that's more emotions, because there's no right or wrong around emotions. Mm-hmm. But I think also when I have friendships where I know there's no like ill intent, maybe the person is just having a shitty day, or maybe I'm having a shitty day, and there's that level of forgiveness and grace for that. Like, you give me grace all the time, and I hope you feel like I extend grace to you.
All the time.
So,
especially when I'm in a bad mood.
And we don't even need to talk about it, right? You don't need to tell me, Leanne, I'm in a bad mood, or I don't need to say, Roshan, I've had a shitty day. Grace is just a part of our friendship. I think we've come to the end of the episode. That was very interesting. Lots of conversations around conflict, resolution, vulnerability. I liked it. But listen, subscribe, share with anyone and everyone, and we'll be back next week.
See ya.
Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.